listener production.
Hey all, welcome to the Adam and Simon Show. And today we are bringing back the big man himself, Mason Cox.
The pies are flying. This man is flying. And we had a chat with him. We had a chat with him mid-2022. And high time that it came back, because everything we talked about then is still relevant.
Yeah.
We talk about what it was like to go from a Texas basketballer to one of the AFL's, well, the AFL's tallest player.
Yep.
We talk about what it's like and how you deal with on-field sledging, which is quite funny.
He tells a couple of like backstories from the days in the Collingwood preseason training. Mm. He opens up about everything. He's just, I mean, he's a big dude.
Good guy. 6'11".
Great guy.
6'11". Didn't take us long to ask him how tall he was. So that's good
very
stuff.
Very early.
Well. Yep.
Like everyone, you will see that and hear that question happen very early in the piece.
Very much so. Mason Cox.
Welcome to the Adam and Simon Show. It's interview day. Today's guest is the biggest guest we've ever had, Tom.
Well, we got there early, didn't we?
We did.
We got there very, very early. It is Collingwood superstar, sure.
Yeah.
Question mark.
Collingwood superstar?
Collingwood superstar.
And
I'll
host,
say he's a superstar.
Host of the Mason Cox Show podcast. He's used the same marketing team to name his podcast that we did. The man himself. You can find him on Instagram, Mason610Cox. Mason, welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited. I'm a little bit nervous, but I am excited.
Well, hopefully don't be nervous. We're always nervous whenever it comes to guests, because it's more just how long will it take us to relax into just being idiots.
Yeah. Ah, okay.
We've got to get everyone's like fronting this at the start. You know, everyone's like, oh, hey.
It is the old 5-minute intro, you know.
Yeah. What are we doing?
We've got to get all the, like, the easy questions out first, and then we get into the hard-hitting stuff later. So, easy questions.
Start the easiest question of all time.
These are the icebreakers, though.
Yeah.
I like it. Just to make it comfortable.
Yeah.
What's the quickest that, because it would happen to you all the time, people talk about that you're tall.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that you're tall.
I've actually got a shirt I wore just for you guys because I knew this was going to come up.
Yep.
I don't know if you can see it.
It says 6'10". Yes, I know I am tall. Yes. He's wearing an actual t-shirt. That is fantastic.
We'll put that on the socials later.
Yeah. You know? Yes.
It just solves so many questions for me to get it.
How often do you?
I knew it was going to come up. Straight off the bat. Just bang.
How often do you meet someone where you, and meet them for the first time, and you don't talk about what it's like to be tall?
Oh, the only people is like if they're over 6'6".
Right.
Because they're like, I know. I have everyone ask the same damn question.
But do they bring that up? Do they go, hey, good thing we don't have to talk about being tall because we're both tall?
Or it's just like,
I think it's an unspoken rule. It's like, it's funny because I'll walk down the supermarket. If there's someone that's over 6'6", like you don't even have to say anything. Don't know. I've never met him in your life. You just give them the
like a mustache nod.
Yes. It's kind of like, you know, like whenever you're driving in the outback, you kind of get the little two fingers, you know, like 2-finger wave of like acknowledgement. There's a little tall people club. It's unknown. You know, you got to be over 6'6".
I definitely don't know about it.
TPC.
I was going to say, actually, I ran into Mason at the kitchen of the office. Mm. I was like, we're talking to you today. And then I went up and shook your hand and we were walking next to each other. I don't know if it's because I've got a sore neck today, but I genuinely was like, this is like almost like I can't be this close to you and talk to you. Because then when we came in the studio and I was further back, I was like, I love talking to you now. Mm. Not that I didn't like talking to you before.
I sit down a hunch to try to get everyone in the same level.
Because you're a good
person. Like I go straight to a bar, sit down.
Yes.
First thing I do.
Because
I'll sometimes go to a bar and I'll have people kind of linger around me every once in a while. And I'll kind of be like, oh, what are you doing? They'll go, oh, I told my friend just to go find the tallest guy at the bar.
I'm
like, hey, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
That'd be easy, like if you're going on a date and you've never met the person before, you wouldn't have to be like, I'm going to be the guy in the red shirt. You'd just be like, I'm going to be the tallest person at the bar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, you know? But if I'm sitting down at a table, who knows? But that's as good as my dating life gets, I think, as far as my bio is 6'11".
Although, on the research though, mate, apparently you and Delta Goodrum are about to start dating.
Yeah. Cool.
She's got a boyfriend. A lot of people have gone through this. She's got a boyfriend. I've got to respect Delta. She's a lovely, lovely girl. I've never met her.
No.
Would love to meet Delta. Would love to go to a little show. But no, she's unfortunately got a boyfriend, but she's
not for the boyfriend, unfortunately, but
beautiful lady, great singer.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to be creepy about this.
You've succeeded. Absolutely succeeded.
I feel like everyone in Australia, I said like she's a great singer, everyone's like, stop hitting on her. And I'm like, I literally just said she has a great voice.
People would ask you the question to open it to them. They go like, oh, what do you think of Delta? Waiting to be like, all right, whatever he says here, he's gonna love her.
Well, that's what the article said. The headline is like, Collingwood star Mason Cox flirts with Delta Goodrum. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that he wouldn't have done this. And then I definitely clicked it, though.
You paid the subscription to Herald Sun, didn't you?
And then it was like, he just did a tweet. I was like, that doesn't count. No. That doesn't count.
Although that was like Joel Embiid, who we will come to in a sec. Mm. He used to tweet out at Rihanna all the time.
Yes, he did.
He was a big tweeter. And that was like shameless flirting.
Well, was it just creepy stalking?
I mean, is it less stalking?
Mason's like three tweets away from hitting that territory.
No, I think it's all about the frequency and how many you do. And Joel Embiid was doing a lot quite regularly about Riri.
Yeah,
and I'm not here to brag, but she did kind of like put something up on her Instagram and it was like, you know, tagged me in it. So I was like, you know, I feel less creepy because it's kind of like a mutual thing now. Yeah. So
I think it's shout out to Delta's boyfriend, who no longer is a fan of the show.
Yeah, of course.
We're just really encouraging Mace to really just
it becomes less stalkery, I think, the more famous you are.
Yeah.
So because you're like a famous guy, people know who you are. It's less stalkery. Whereas if you were like a random person that just kept like tweeting at Delta, then people are like, oh, maybe this guy's a stalker.
Yeah, I feel like it's a bit more stalkery because it gets more like coverage sometimes, you know? Like the Herald Sun wrote an article about it and I was just like, I literally just tweeted like, she killed it in the grand final. And it was like, Mason Cox loves Delta Drew. I'm like, what? I was like, okay. I mean, like, you know, if she was single, well, then it's a whole different scenario. Exactly. But
the preface is always there. It's like, hey, she's not, but if she was, if she was.
I was going to leave the door ajar.
When it comes to being famous, but also being...
Y'all are throwing this famous thing around loosely. Like, I'm not a famous person. I'm just freakishly tall is essentially what I've got going
I mean,
for me.
There has been points in your life where 100,000 people have chanted USA.
Yeah, that was
at the same
cool.
time.
Yeah.
Like that's,
I was at that game.
That's pretty famous.
Yeah.
Is it more difficult being famous and tall than just being... Well, you wouldn't know, but do you assume being famous and tall? Because people, you would walk down the street and people go, got him. Yeah. Whereas I'm 5'9", no one's walking down the street going,
got him.
They're like, get out of the way. Do you know what I mean?
You're that also guy from the podcast.
Yeah, exactly right.
I know your voice.
Yeah.
Say something. Go on. Say something.
It's kind of weird because I think in like, because there's not, like I look at it now, like the reason I play AFL is because there's not guys whirling around in the streets that are 6'11". Mm. Like, and that's just, that's a pure, you know, that's a common fact. But I think because I am so tall, people instantly go, oh, bang. Oh, he's got to be an athlete. Okay, hold on. Does he play basketball? Don't recognize him. He play AFL. American. Yep, I know who he is. And it's like this whole, you can see people actually like kind of grinding their gears in their head as they're like kind of looking at you and you're like, they're like, I know you. And I'm like, yeah, like keep going. They're like, oh, Nathan. It's Nathan, isn't it? And I was like, yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah, Nathan. Nathan Buckley. Here's my name.
Pretty good. Pretty
played for Collingwood, right? Yeah, yeah, I mean, well, you're not wrong.
Yeah, you know, Brownlow medals and a few, you know, Norm Smith and whatnot, you know. Pretty successful players, I'd say.
Maybe you'll have a premiership over Bucks, though, one day.
Whoa.
We're pretty on par. I think he's played a few more games than me.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are you at? You're at 97, right?
94 games, I think, 95. Y'all count games, which I just kind of fun weird. I was counting goals for a bit because I was like, I hit the 100 mark recently. Which
no one cares, bro, unless it's 1,000.
All right, whenever you're like the only born and bred American, like you're essentially breaking records every week, I like to think.
he's done it again. Another week, another week, another record.
He's broken the games record, 94. It's like, okay. Not impressive.
So what do you do now the season's done? Like there's this grace period between season finishing and preseason starting, which I assume is in about a month or so.
December 5, I think we start.
Oh, a couple of months.
Mm. Yeah,
so you got annual leave. What are you doing for annual leave? Collingwood still pay you while you're on leave?
Yeah, so it's a contract. It's a full contract. So the contracts start November 1st. You get paid throughout the whole thing. So now you're getting paid, but you're also probably spending a lot more money because you're going and traveling, doing things like that. Whenever you're playing, like you're kind of, I mean, you're at the club every single day. On the weekends, you're playing games. Like it's very kind of confined in what you do. And there's not really vacations and stuff in between there and everything's paid by the club. So nowadays, everyone goes on holiday, goes overseas. So I'll go back to the U.S., see my family and stuff. I'm going up to Cairns to do some Indigenous charity work, which would be good fun. And then I'm going over to the US AFL, which is an AFL league in the US, and they've got a national tournament. I'll be
my mate's playing in that, playing for the Boston Demons.
The Boston Demons, love that. I've probably run into them because I've been there for like 5 or 6 years. I'm doing the ambassador work every single year, going back for that. We'll go to the NFL, go to Chargers Monday Night Football game. We'll go to Lakers, Rams, Cowboys, Eagles, Texans. So do a lot of sports stuff over there. Like it's kind of cool, like because I grew up with not much, right? Like we very fortunate in my family and providing and everything else. But as far as like kind of this somewhat quasi fandom and all this kind of stuff didn't famous exist for me. 16, you know?
Famous guy.
Well, 6'11". But it's
I'm just reading your shirt.
Shirt says 16.
I know.
Did you grow? Just, what happened?
Well, I did grow an inch, but actually I didn't make the shirt. Someone else made it for me. Oh, so I was okay, like, gotcha. They didn't want to make a bunch that were 6'11". No one likes to say that. It's 6'11". You might as well just sell 7 foot. You know. But now, so I'll go back and I kind of find it cool because like I didn't grow up with this opportunities to do these kind of things, you know. So now that I've got this kind of, you know, opportunity to do things with NFL Australia and NBA Australia and like all these different things, it's like take it and run with it, you know, like make hay while the sun shines, enjoy all the experiences that come with it, because, you know, I've been in the league long enough now to know that these things can be quite fleeting. You can be gone 1 year and then, you know, can be next person's in the next year and you can completely forgot about. So myself, it's like, you know what, take every opportunity and run with it, make the most of the, like, you know, the like life in the, at the moment and everything that's going on. And that's kind of where I'm at the moment.
And is that where the, all of the USA stuff is coming from? Is it through the Australian arms of USA branding, essentially?
Yeah. There's some that are like kind of connections I've made throughout kind of being here and meeting certain people and stuff. Like I've met a guy, he kind of helps run media for the Golden State Warriors. So I'll jump up and say hi to him and go to a game and stuff and chill out with him for a bit. I'm looking to meet up with Phil Handy, who's the assistant coach of the Lakers, who I met recently. NFL Australia is doing stuff with me to be able to help me go to like the Monday Night Football game, things like that, and NBA Australia. And it's a good way. Like I find it cool because there's not a lot of Americans here that play AFL. Obviously, there's one American that plays the biggest sport in Australia.
Yep. And not a lot. Like, that definitely is not a lot. Yep.
Nah, and it's not one. No.
One.
Not,
one is
a lot. Bigger than what zero. Do you think would be a lot?
What would
five?
Be a lot?
Would five be a lot?
I think there's about 10 Irish guys, 10 to 20
yeah,
Irish guys.
Yeah, I think
guys
that's
in the
a
league,
lot.
So like, that's a fair few.
It's a lot for country. Irish guys, yeah.
Yeah, but to be
a
like
a lot would be more than one per team. So I'll say 20.
Okay.
20.
Because
okay.
Then I'd be like, that's a lot.
That's a lot, yeah.
Right. Okay.
But I think being an American and being the only American that does it, it's kind of cool because these opportunities come that like, you know, might get shifted off to different people where it's like an American comes in town, like, they're just going, Mason, you're like, you're our go-to person.
You sound like him.
Yeah, you sound like him. Like, you know, you can, you know, you've got similar experiences to him. You've lived in America a long time. Like, we can just stick you two together and it'll work, you know?
Yeah,
and
absolutely. Like, that's how life works, right?
Yeah, you know. You're
pretty much reverse Ben Simmons.
I guess. But like, yeah, Ben Simmons is doing a lot more, making a lot more money than I am. But
yeah, that's a real bummer.
He's living the absolute dream. Is he still dating one of the Jenners?
No.
Or the Kardashians?
No, he was engaged to a British TV host, but they broke up.
Oh.
They were single.
See, click on all the clickbait.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
I know. All over the Herald Sun. He is a subscriber.
Yeah. Nah, news.com.
News.com.
It's cheaper. It's the cheap version.
It's the same
of
article
it.
For free.
Yeah, correct. They still need the clicks. Hey, they still need the clicks, guys. Someone's making money off that. Sorry, keep going. So all of the US opportunities, they just kind of, all of those connections come together. And then have you stayed in contact with anyone from, let me start again because we'll go back and then I'll ask that question. This will be quite fun. This will be a good callback. Why are you playing AFL? How has that happened? I mean, I know why, and I know the story, obviously, but for context, and then my question will make sense later.
Why am I playing AFL? I ask that question a lot.
Yeah.
That question comes to me a lot. I somehow just stumbled into this thing. In short, I'm not sure how much you want to go into the details of the background.
Yep.
Like, I could sit here. I've talked about my story a million times, but... soccer growing up into university to study mechanical engineering. That went into playing basketball at the university as a walk-on. From there, playing the NCAA tournament, which is one of the biggest tournaments in the nation. From that, got emails and stuff to say, hey, do you want to come to this thing in Los Angeles for this combine called AFL? It was like, what, like Arena Football League? I wasn't really sure what it was. Never heard of it in my life. And so I was like, free trip to LA, free drinks and everything. I was like, yeah, why not?
I've just finished college. Let's go.
Exactly. I was eating ramen, like 5 cent ramen noodles every single night. This was luxury. And I was like, yeah, I'll go over there, do some runs, do some jumps, just I'll check it all out, you know, and then have a few days on the back end to go hang out with friends. Everything went really well, and I was like, oh, shit, this is, like, turning into a real opportunity. I don't know what to do. So I had a job at ExxonMobil, number one Fortune 500 company in the world, or in the U.S. at the time, was making tons of money. Like, I was going to have a great job there, and that was, like, kind of my future, and I'd already accepted that and moved my stuff to Houston and everything else. And then this AFL thing came out of nowhere, and I talked to my brother. He became the Jerry Maguire of this whole thing and, like, you
Show
know, became my agent and was just like, yo, let's see what we can do. And he contacted all these different clubs that were contacting me, and then I was finished university. He and myself went over to Australia to like figure out what this was because we didn't think it was real. Like we were legit
still getting
it was
hacked
like,
and yep.
Oh, it was. I mean,
like
you can imagine
some
guy
from Nigeria.
Yeah, some guy texts you on Facebook and goes, "The AFL, it's this great sport in Australia you've never heard of," and I'm like, yeah, is this spam?
Absolutely.
Don't know what's going on.
Comes through the primary inbox is concerning.
Yeah, exactly. I had to go to like general, then the plus after that. And so, yeah, this whole thing came out of nowhere. And then like did that. And then my brother and I went over here for 2 weeks and realized it was a real thing with like thousands of people that followed it. And it just made no sense. I was like, surely like with the internet, like we would have heard of this by now, you know? And with the US, it's such a sporting culture. I don't think like these things kind of make it in there because there's so much, you know, focus on other things there. And yeah, I just had never heard of it. So I was like, didn't really believe it was real until we actually came here for 2 weeks, checked it out, talked to the 5 different clubs, you know, talked to the AFL, found it was real and substantial and going to get a guaranteed contract and money was going to be guaranteed. And went through this whole thing. It was just kind of this like chaos and whatnot. But it was just an unreal experience. And I was like, I remember like this moment we were on the St. Kilda Beach and my brother and I talking, I talked this before. It's like, we're sitting there and my brother goes, look, like a degree doesn't expire, but opportunities like this will. And he's like, you'll never be able to just work out for a living. Like that just doesn't exist and not many people get that opportunity. And he's like, dude, I'm not going to say, yes, you have to do this. I'm not going to say anything like that. You know, it's your decision, your life, make whatever you want to do of it. But my, you know, my direction towards this is you got to realize the opportunity that's in front of you. And I'll never forget the moment because it was kind of like, and it gives me goosebumps now. And it's just like, there's very few times in your life I feel like you have this huge change in direction of like where you're going, you know? Like I'm sure you two would have had this at some point where now you guys are doing media and everything else. And like, what were you doing beforehand? Like
physios.
And then what would have been the big shining light moment that goes, oh my gosh, like we can start doing media. And then you go on to, you know, TV and everything else. Like, well,
Adam texted me and said, do you want to go on Gogglebox? And I said, do you think we can drink free beers at the Logies? That was our shining light.
And what did you have to do? Like just send an email? Or
literally.
So you just found some online thing and just said like, you know.
Well, they found
Did you know what Gogglebox was at the time?
No, not at all.
So you just applied to a random show you knew nothing about.
No, a lady approached us at the pub and said, hey, I've got a show for you. And we said, sounds a bit boring. Said, no, trust me.
There's free beer.
It sounds like our stories, they correlate a lot.
It is, but I think that, like every person that's been into like media like has this kind of this big turning point in their life where it's like, okay, you know, I have this moment that I go, oh my gosh, like things are about to change drastically, not just like in a small subject. And that was mine. It was like, oh, I can live and work out for a living and, you know, get paid, not like, you know, American sport money kind of like that, but like enough to definitely live off of and have amazing experience traveling the world. And it was like, okay, I can have, you know, both things that are amazing in life, like, you know, be able to have a house over my head and roof and everything else and financially stable and then also be able to travel the world for 2 months out of the year. And it's like, not many people would say no to that, you know, coming from getting 2 weeks off a year in the US. So that whole kind of thing just changed my life. And yeah, from there, I essentially just ended up like going back home, spent 2 months traveling Europe, which was something I always wanted to do. Just backpacked, like slept in train stations, was like homeless for 2 months and just loved it. Just loved it. And I think 14 countries in 2 months is what I did in Europe. And just got a Eurorail pass, just cruised around, man. It was awesome. Epic, epic stories that happened within that. And then came back and I was like, all right, man, I guess I'm going to like, I remember I got on the flight to the US before I went to Europe. And like, I was like, oh, am I really about to just take this opportunity in Australia? Like something I've never heard of Melbourne, never heard of AFL, didn't know a single person in town. And like, I'm going to fly 17 or 18 hour flight away from home to go try this thing out that I have no idea anything about. And I remember getting on the plane and shitting myself going like, what the fuck? Sorry, can I pass on here?
Yeah.
What the fuck did I just commit to here? Like, what are you doing?
What have I done?
And it's one of those moments because you don't have cell phone service, so you don't text anybody. You're just in your own thoughts and you're just really just cranking them through and you're going, oh my gosh, what have I done? What have I committed to? What am I, like, what's the life going to be? What's 5 years going to be like?
14-hour flight, perfect.
Oh, just plenty of free time, no doubt. So I just got on a flight and I was just like, this is crazy, man. Like my life is about to change for better or for worse, whatever, I'll learn from it, whatever happens. Yep. But like this amazing opportunity is gonna happen and like I'm gonna take it and just run with it and make the most of it. And that's what I've been able to hopefully do. And went over to Europe for 2 months and then came back and was like, all right, teach me what the hell AFL is.
Let's go.
And I just was like, for 2 months, while everyone else went on holidays for those 2 months, Craig McRae, who's their head coach now, him and Anthony Rocco like essentially brought me in, said, we're gonna have you as family, essentially took me to dinners and everything else. And became really close to them. They said, we're going to teach you what AFL is, from handballing, kicking, running, you know, penalties, all this stuff that I had no idea anything about. We're going to just have a crash course in 2 months. And then you're going to play with all these guys that have played their whole life. And yeah. I was like, okay, sweet. Dane Swan, Trav Cloak, Scott Penderbury. I'm sitting there lining up next to him after 2 months of learning what the F of sport is. And I'm going, I literally am shitting myself going, I don't deserve to be here and I don't know what I'm doing. Like I'm literally just following the guy in front of me. And that was just kind of like baptism by fire. It was like, either you're going to sink or, you know, sink or swim.
back to my question.
In short, sorry, I just wanted a huge tangent.
No, I love it. That's the perfect, like, we do such a bad job on this podcast of actually building the context of who the person is.
Mm.
That was exactly the answer that I needed to perfect. Then ask this question.
Hit it.
Are you in contact with anyone else who went to that AFL combine?
Yes, I was. I was really close with a guy named Alex Arucchio. Unfortunately, this is kind of going down a bit of a sally, but he's passed away recently in Northern Territory. He played for the Waratahs and had this tragedy over COVID and passed away. He was the one I probably stayed in contact with most. There's another fellow that played for Gonzaga, which is a basketball team in the U.S., and it was the last team we played before we got knocked out of the tournament. And we got picked up in an unmarked white van before we went to this AFL just combine. Terrifying. Yes, it was very, like, I've done some sketchy things in my life. And a lot of them
include the AFL.
Bumper
sticker on the van or something?
Oh, nothing.
Picked up in an unmarked white van, and you quite ironically produce your own podcast from an unmarked white van.
I know.
Life goes full circle.
Got to keep things consistent.
Yeah. I feel at home here. I don't know why, but I do.
Oh, that's not creepy at all.
Delta, I don't own a white van. Delta, trust me, I don't own an unmarked white van.
Ready for coffee?
Ready for coffee. Yeah, so that guy, I haven't talked to him in a long time, but every once in a while we'll message each other on Facebook and talk about how crazy of a story everything's kind of led to. And he's played basketball overseas in Europe and things like that. And I've obviously come over here and kind of fulfilled that, you know, whole combine scenario. That's about it. Like, the rest of the guys, I don't really know what they're doing. I can almost guarantee you none of them are really playing sport anymore, which is kind of crazy. But no one expected anything to come of it. Everyone's like sitting there in the hotel room and we're all looking at each other like, what are we doing? Like, what is this thing? Like, what is this ball? Like, what is this rugby? Like, we had no clue. And, like, none of us had ever heard of it and didn't know anything about it. And it was, like, this awkward, like, kind of, I don't know, like, everyone's in the same mindset of, like, total confusion of, like, what this whole thing's about. We just kind of got an email and a free trip to LA, and we're like, yeah, cool, whatever, man. And
do you know how many people they sent the email to?
I know there's about, like, 20 people at the combine, I think, 20, 25.
Yep.
But they're, I mean, sure, they probably would have sent it to other people and legit it would have gone probably to their spam account or something and been like, this is not real. I was fortunate enough, whenever we got the email, our media person, he picked it up and then he knew someone that was Australian. So then he asked him what it was and he was like, dude, Collingwood's like the biggest thing in Australia. And he's like, it's legit. He's like, nah, it's legit. And he was like the tennis coach, I think, at our university. And, so he kind of somewhat legitimized it. And then we had an Australian girl, Georgia, who I think she's back in Melbourne now, was at university. And she was like, nah, it's like a big deal. Like, it's a massive deal.
You should definitely do it.
And I was like, okay, I'll go to the combine, see what happens. And after the combine, it was like articles being written and like all the stuff of like, you know, the next Nick Natanui. And it was like all this stuff, you know. I was like, yeah, I don't even know how to kick a ball. Like, and people are already putting this, like, you know, these titles on me. And I'm just like, bro, no. And so it's just kind of this like crazy thing. And I had to call up Exxon and tell him like, look, I still want your job. I might commit to this AFL thing and I'm not sure. And like, I'd already moved my stuff to Houston, picked out an apartment, everything else. Like all my gear was down there. Like, I was ready to go. And then this whole AFL thing came out of the blue. And I think it was like 24 hours after I finished the combine, like, I ended up getting home, agreeing to it. And then I was leaving like 24 hours later for Europe. So I had to move my stuff within 24 hours back to Dallas to my parents' place to like...
That's already too much stress. I would have aborted the mission already long ago.
That is not logistics for you, Simon Lovett.
Oh, I've aborted. I'm giving up on the AFL dream. I'll just work for Exxon.
I picture you just leave your stuff in Houston. You'd be like,
I'll buy new stuff. It's fine.
The biggest thing, though, is like, I just didn't want to be in an office. You know, my brother talks about this all the time. He says, I don't want to be in an office saying, well, I wonder what I'd be doing if I did that. What if kind of thing. And I was like, I don't want to be that guy.
92,000 the MCG is not a bad office to have.
Yeah.
It's not, man. And they took me out there to the MCG and they actually said, they're like, this could be your next office. And I remember sitting in the middle of the ground looking around in 360 and I was like, this is pretty damn cool.
It's like, not a bad like sales pitch, is it?
Nah.
Just the walk around and they're like, hey, man, you could work here. And you're like, okay.
Okay. That's pretty sick. Good. And like,
actually, did you think when you signed and you kind of committed, did you think that you would play?
I think I did.
Yeah, cool.
I'm a bit, I don't know if it's cockiness or confidence or whatever it is. People all have their different ideas of it, but I'm stubborn is like what I like to think.
I like that even more. That's so good.
It's kind of like a word you can use that everyone understands and can agree with, I think, rather than saying, oh, he's too cocky or he's too confident or whatever it might be. And I'm just stubborn where I'm like, if someone's better at me at something, like, I will find a way to beat them. Like whether it be Monopoly cheating, putting $500 bills underneath, like, you know, the board, or somehow getting Park Place randomly. Like, I will find a way to win. And
I think the way that you describe that, then the stubbornness is a much better way to describe it than like cockiness or arrogance or whatever what people want
especially
to put
in
on.
Australia, we're far too insecure to be confident.
Because also briefly you was when you were saying before about like they're calling me Nick Nat New, and I'm like, well, guys, like that's not me. I don't even know how to kick yet.
I don't even know.
So
who
there's
was.
Like there's the side of you that is like the vulnerable, like
self-aware.
Hey, yeah, like I know that I'm not a superstar because I don't even know what this is yet. There's the confidence to be able to play it. So I think stubbornness is a much better way to describe than like confidence or cockiness.
Yeah, and it's I think all athletes are stubborn. They have to be somewhat selfish, man. I think like obviously people that are married and have kids and you know girlfriends, whatever it may be, like that, you know, like. You give up your weekends every single weekend. Like, and there's no, oh, sorry, I'm going to take off work. You know, like you can't do that. Like it doesn't exist. Like they
can't
have to
call
give
in
up.
Sick.
No, like you have to give up so much to be able to support the partner and everything else where, I just think like everyone that plays AFL, people don't realize it is like, they have to be like this just kind of just deadly mindset of like, I'm going to be the best. And like, no matter who's in my way, I'm going to make sure that I'm better than them. And I'm going to run through them. And it's like this crazy mindset that I never quite understood. And the cool thing about AFL is it's taught me just how far I can push my body. Like I kind of would be back in the States, you know, you get to the tire and you kind of, you know, you hit the wall and you're like, oh, okay, I'm done, you know. Where it's like, I hit the wall and I'm excited to hit the wall now. I'm like,
now it starts.
Like,
now
now the real grind starts kind of thing, you know. And it's kind of weird, man. I don't know. I'm a bit of an odd person. But, there's just so much I've learned from AFL, from, you know, mental headspace to physical, you know, physical abilities and everything else that comes with it that's grown me as a person. Like if you met me at 18 years old, you would not even recognize the same person, I guarantee you.
When you were, because you're clearly very self-aware, so when you at the Collingwood, you get signed, you're next to Pendles, you're next to Travis Cloke, you're next to all of these full-blown, bona fide, generational superstars, but you're also self-aware enough to know that you don't know what you're doing, but stubborn enough to know I'm going to figure it out. Is there a point in that journey where you almost like stop pretending and you're like, okay, I've got enough of a figure out what to do. Now I can push in that direction. Or is at the start, I'm assuming you're just like, oh, I don't know where I should push my energy.
Yeah. I think the start, like one of the biggest things, like being American was the stigma that came with it. And they had an American there before, and I'm not going to talk ill about anyone else, but I think we kind of went about it in different ways. And my biggest thing was trying to get rid of that stigma. Like was, you know, the stigma was I'm going to walk in here, I'm going to be King Dick, I'm going to run this place, I'm going to be so good, I'm going to play so many games, all this kind of stuff where I was like, nah, nose to the grindstone, I'm going to work my ass off and I'm going to prove to you guys that like I am better than the next person. Not because I'm just getting a gig because, you know, like we're just handing one to them, you know, like I want to actually earn this thing. So that was my biggest thing for that first year, was trying to figure out, you know, what the perception of what me was and then being able to change that, because it was not positive from the day one. And I can almost guarantee you most coaches would have just thrown me to the side and not cared about me, you know, and said like, he's never going to play. He doesn't know the game. We don't care about it. It's just a project, whatever, you know, it's not in my business. Where the people that really took me on, Craig and Anthony Rocker, were like, you know, I think you're going to be successful, man. Like you're going to do some pretty amazing stuff. You've got attributes that other people don't have here. And as long as we put them all together, like we're going to make an incredible athlete that's totally different from anyone else. And there's tough times and everything else, but it was unique, like to be there with guys that just killed it, like we're guns, like Hall of Famers and all this stuff, and you got a guy that literally walks in and has no idea like which way the umpire's pointing, like, and you're going like, what the hell, what is this idiot doing here?
When you talk about doubt, was there a moment that you were like, shit, I really don't know if I can do this and maybe I should just head back to the States?
Yeah, I've had plenty of those, man. Like, you can imagine, like, there was this massive, you know, spike whenever you first start training. Because it's like, you're learning everything. Like, everything's like, and you start clicking on things, you know, that people have been able to kick a ball straight, you know, and then be able to drop it and then be able to handball and be able to handball left-handed. And, like, all these things that I was just picking up. I was like, oh, sick, I can now do this. I can now do this. I can now do this. Like, and then it kind of tapers off. And then that was around the same time. Like Jason Holmes in my first year was the first born and bred American to ever play AFL. And he got a gig with St. Kilda. And I was pissed because I was like, I want to be the first.
I want to be number one.
You know, like I want to be the first. I was furious. He had been in the system for like 2-3 years. So like credit to him. Love Jason. Good friends with him. absolute legend, deserved it. But like in my mind, he would have known this. I would have been like, fuck you, dude. And he played that first year and that shit, man. I was like, man, like I really want to be the first. And there's little things like that. Like you're like, man, I wish I could have done that. Or, you know, like being able to kick a ball straight. I remember like breaking down and crying on the, you know, like, and just being like, fuck it. I'm just like crying and like still kicking goals. Like I'm going to fucking figure this out, man. Like this is going to work. Like I'm going to get this done and be able to kick X amount of goals, you know, be able to kick like, you know, 6 out of 10 goals or something like that, you know. And there's those moments where you're away from home, you're away from your like community and your people that support you and everything else. And like, I had to grow that here. Like I didn't have people I knew here. I didn't know a soul here. I had to trust people that I'd never met before to like be, you know, wanting the best thing for me and things like that. So once I kind of got my groove and everything else, like that's when everything started clicking. And you know, that confidence other people given you like kind of helped you get to the next level. And I think that was like, I play now and I'm like, I remember last year whenever I was like getting recruited, maybe playing somewhere else and stuff. And then Craig came on and like in my mindset, I was like, nah, this is a way for me to help give back to him what he's given to me. And I'm like, I'm here for him now. Like whatever he wants me to do, I'll do. I don't care. Like no questions asked. Like, you know, if you want me to go run up a hill or jump off a cliff or whatever it is, man, like just tell me like jump how high kind of thing, you know? So now it's cool for me to be like, as an older man who's been in the system for a bit longer, to be able to give back and help him grow a culture and grow, you know, a team that wants to be successful and see him be able to be successful in his own right as a head coach. So that's kind of the reason I came back and really wanted to play for him, which is really cool.
And it seems like, you know, he seems like an incredibly tough person to play for. Not really.
He's a legend.
He seems like the best bloke ever. Yeah. And he just fully has his players back. So it kind of, it's, I guess, not surprising to hear that he's one of the first people to kind of take you under his wing and say, hey, like, we can do it. We can do this. Were there other people who stood out early days in your kind of community that you made around yourself? Were they all footy club people or were there people outside of the footy club who you just adopted you or you adopted them?
Yeah, I'm good friends with Darcy Moore. He came into the system at the same time. Very mature, young, 18-year-old. Like he'll be the captain one day, and I can almost guarantee that. Like, and I've never said that before, so like this is maybe a first time kind of thing. I'm not really sure. The guy over there is like, he's like, oh yes, baby, here we go.
Time tagged it. Yeah,
time tagged it. But he's a legend, man. He's obviously, you know, his dad played and all that kind of stuff. But like, he is his own human who's doing his own thing and is amazing in his own right. And his moral and ethics and everything else is such a high level that people like that you want leading a club. And yeah, I'm sitting here, you know, I'm 31 now and he's probably 26, 27, something like that. And like, I sometimes find myself following him and I'm like, yo, I'm like 4 or 5 years older than you, man. Like you should be following me. Like, why am I looking at you for like advice kind of thing, you know? So he's one of those people that just kind of, you know, has always been there for me. But I think the biggest thing for me, because I didn't grow up loving football. Like, I didn't know what it was, you know?
That's a lot weird, of people, actually. Like, guy from Texas didn't grow up loving AFL.
Yeah, people always like, man, because everyone's obsessed with it here. They're like, man, got to know this, got to know that. And I'm like, people will tell me news about my club before I find out.
Perfect.
And it's like, I just don't, like, I don't open the AFL app. I don't open news.com. I don't do that. You know,
it's a good website. Yeah, it's actually website.
Daily free. Mail, two best ones. But I just not probably entrenched it as a lot of other people here are, because they grew up loving it, you know? And I do love the sport, don't get me wrong, but I think it's been more of an experience and a journey for me rather than like, you know, my life goal. Like, I always kind of say, so, you know, footy's been amazing. It's, you know, given me some amazing opportunities, but that next thing is like, I think I'll be even happier doing that. And I'm like, there's always this next carrot of like, man, I can, now I've done this, I can do this next thing and like this next thing and this next thing. And who knows, this might not be the best thing I ever do in my life. Where a lot of people are like, man, AFL's it. AFL's the greatest thing that'll ever happen to you, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, nah, I got this mentality that I kind of hope there's something better past AFL, you know? Like, I don't want to think that this is it, you know? Like, I want to be able to build something more that I'm even more excited to go to and more like, you know, actually motivated to happen and to do on a daily basis. And not saying that's taken away from what I love doing at AFL level, but I just always have this idea that there's something more. There's this carrot in front of you that you can always reach a bit more, a bit further, a bit further, a bit further. And that's kind of what I've hopefully been able to do with AFL. But I want to go back to, because I've just thought of something. I want to go back to that question of something that, you know, changed your career in a positive way. And I've never told the story, because I like to give the little stories out whenever I go to different podcasts, right? it's a story I've never told. It was Falls Creek. We used to go to Falls Creek, right? And this is me jumping everywhere, but screw it.
this is my show now. Like, this is my show now.
This is why he does his podcast in a van, so he can get everywhere.
I'm usually interviewing other people, so it's cool to kind of tell my story sometimes.
Mate,
you know,
get it out.
You know, I'll go back and ask you guys a personal question. So Falls Creek, we're sitting there, and I like to give little snippets here and there. So Falls Creek, we go up there, and Jerry Woods was playing first at the time. I don't know if he remembers this or not. Brody Grundy remembers it too. And first year, go up there and trying to prove to everyone, I'm more than just an American cocky prick. And
I am that, but I also
have feelings.
Stubborn, not cocky.
Yeah. And I remember getting up there and there's this like last day, right? The last day is like this big kind of marathon of different things. You know, you're doing push-ups, you're doing like ice baths and like the cold, you're rolling in the snow, you know, you're doing like sit-ups and all this kind of like carrying logs, all this stuff. And you have to make it up to the top of the mountain, right? And you have teams and whatnot. And there's some like run at the end. And I remember it was like myself and Brody. And Brody was up there with me, kind of being like the number one ruckman and all that. And I was like, F it, I'm going to take him on. And I remember, like, we're at the top of this mountain. We had to run down this hill at the very last bit. There's a photo of it, too. And, like, it's me and Brody, and it's, like, two just, like, newborn giraffes just, like, sprinting down this hill, looking gangly as hell and just, like, flailing arms everywhere. And, like, I just remember finishing that, and I collapsed. And I was, like, I got nothing left in my legs. Like, I've never been more exhausted in my life. And I remember just like that was a moment I think coaches go like, oh shit, nah, he's gonna put the fucking work in. Like he's got the CUNT as like coaches like to say.
Yeah.
Got a bit of CUNT in him. And that was one moment from that thing. And I think another one was I think it was maybe a year later with Jared Witts. We had this thing we used to do BOSU ball, big ball. Yeah. We used to do a wrestle and you'd try to wrestle the ball off one another, right? So it was like this whole thing, this is like kind of tournament thing, whatever, and everyone's watching. It was like,
I love that everything in AFL is a competition.
Oh, it has to be.
It's like if you're doing it. He's like, all right, we're going to do push-ups.
Who's going to win?
But against each other. We're definitely doing it against each other. Otherwise, no one would do them or try.
Nah, well, no one would like push themselves to be like, like whenever you get a different person, especially if you got guys like going against each other for spots, and then it gets real competitive.
Oh, yeah. So if you get a bit too competitive?
Yeah, oh, 100%, man. Okay, cool. I tell stories. But back when we used to box, we used to box against each other, and boys would get a bit rowdy. Let's just say that.
There's
a little bit of, hey, separate, sir. Enough of that.
You've got to put gloves on, fellas.
There's gloves and headgear and all that. But in this whole scenario, it was the BOSU ball, and it's like this BOSU ball, if anyone knows, kind of what it is, like kind of like a meter wide. You know, kind of sphere, and you wrap your arms around each, right? So each person tries to get as much grip on it as wants, and they say go, and you try to rip it off each other. And it's guys like just swinging. It's like a thumb war, but like full body. And I don't know if that's the best way to describe it. But
so guys, we're doing thumb wars today.
Day up the mountain.
Whoever wins gets to play center forward.
Yeah, exactly. And well, Jerry Woods was the number one ruck at the time. Brody was coming up, and I was like sitting there with him, and I was like, nah, I'm going to show him what's up. I'm going to take the top tier fella down. You know. And I remember ripping the ball away from him like three times and just showing like, I love Jerry. He's the nicest guy ever. Don't get me wrong.
I
felt like a dick after this. But I was like, fuck you. Oh, fuck you. Come on, fucking bring it. You know? And I was yelling.
You put
at
on
him,
your
like,
Australian accent too.
That's how you know he's doing the real deal.
I know. And I was like sitting there. I was like yelling at him to like get back in and like try to rip it from me. And I was like just, and everyone was watching. I was like, holy shit. This guy's like crazy. It's like, dude, what have we recruited?
He's lost the plot.
He has lost the plot here in Australia. But it's those moments I think that like I changed that, I like that mentality of people around me. Perception, and just say like, and the perception that was being American over here. And I think it's those little things that add up to something bigger that, you know, shows people that you are deserving of a spot or an opportunity to actually play.
How much do you think, and I guess where does it come from as well, that I feel like you're not stereotypically American, like there is the stereotype that exists that is very cocky and arrogant and America's best and, you know, America may be best, maybe not, not the time for this podcast. So, but like you
it's not. We can finish that story
now.
We got
that there pretty quickly. But like you kind of traveled firstly, and most Americans are not traveling, and you find that, I mean, I personally find that most Americans that you meet in America are very much more the stereotype, whereas the ones that you meet not in America are very much self-aware and they see that the world's kind of out there and that there's other things. And even that comment that you said, that it kind of struck me that you said, you know, like, I hope AFL isn't the best thing that happens to me. I hope there's better things that are still coming. Even that kind of that awareness to know that, like life isn't just right now. It's yeah. kind of what is coming. Where does that come from you? Is that something from your parents or is that something from college or?
A lot of it, like my older brother, I've just, my whole family was just here recently. My older brother, he's been a big, both brothers really have been a big kind of guidance in me in life and like kind of, he's had a lot of different experiences, traveled the world, everything else, both brothers and whatnot. So I think, you know, I don't know if you two, I'm assuming you two have traveled quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think it'd be silly to say you haven't. And, I think, you tell me if I'm wrong, but like whenever you have different experiences, meeting to people from different walks of life and everything else, you realize like how insular your life sometimes can be and like what other opportunities and what other things are out there that people do that's totally unique to anything you knew. And I think like, and like travel is one of the reasons I'm here. Like if I didn't love travel and I didn't love getting away and doing things, like I would have been stuck in my little room, not left, and then been back in America in 6 months because I miss family, you know? So I think that, that bit of like loving to travel and do things and experience things and everything else, like that's kept me in good stead to stay here for 8 years and for however long, you know,
so you the future is going to be. Congratulations.
Yeah, so thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. And that's kind of put me in a good stead. But like, I think that's like something that I've always valued. And my brothers instilled that into me to give like a different perspective on life. And like before you, I hate whenever this is kind of off topic too, but like, I don't know if you have someone that just goes, oh, I hate that guy. Mm. And you go, why do you hate that guy? And he goes, oh, it just seems like a dick. I was like, well, have you met him?
Yeah.
He's like, nah, I'll just hate him. I'm like, okay, well, can you just maybe have an idea to walk in his shoes for 2 seconds and maybe like think of the things he's been through and maybe he's having a bad day or something like that, you know? Like, I just think people sometimes jump to conclusions of what people or like of other, you know, people and judging them. And, you know, it's just, I think like, I like to sit back and hopefully think that I kind of take a step back and say, you know what? Everyone's got their problems, everyone's got their benefits and negatives and, you know, positive negativities, all that kind of stuff. But in general, we're all human. Like, I find it weird whenever people kind of put people on pedestals. Like, you guys would be recognizable now. Like, you're in media and everything else, right? Has anyone come up to you and been like, oh my gosh, I love you guys, you're on TV, blah, blah, blah?
They usually come up and say that they love Lee and Keith from Gogglebox, oh, but...
Lee and Keith too. We like you guys too. Okay, that's very nice.
Yeah. Like, oh my God, you guys are on the show. I love
Lee and Keith. Do you feel weird whenever someone says that?
It's a strange thing, for sure.
Have you ever got used to it?
No, maybe not used to it's probably not the right word, but yeah. kind of you understand it a bit more and you understand what you can do kind of for that person.
You can just be, so we're just sort of like a figure that is on a people's TV and in their lounge rooms, which is really lovely that they let us in
but
there.
You but you provide then people, positivity to people. Yeah, whether you realize it or not, a lot of people get laughs out of you and that, you know, you might be the one thing people look to every single week that they love.
The thing that we try and think of as well is that if someone comes up to you and says like, oh, hey, I love the show. If you're really lovely to them in the 30 seconds it takes to be lovely, you can absolutely make someone's day.
100%.
Whether you're having a shitty day or not,
yeah.
you can just give yourself a couple of minutes to be give them the time of day and validate them and make them feel special and then they will feel special for weeks.
I love that you realize that because a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't realize that you can actually make someone's day with the smallest of gestures. And that's the beauty, I think, of being in the media.
You can also ruin someone's day.
You can. I've done that a few times. It's not the greatest feeling. They'll absolutely roast you on Twitter like 30 seconds later. So.
Yeah, we're getting to this part too.
Because I imagine the Collingwood fans... They're
lovely, lovely, just humans.
Very passionate.
Just passionate.
Passionate is like is the correct adjective for them. But I imagine there would be also a lot of other fans that can be quite brutal to you, in particularly with social media where everybody has a voice and you are very accessible to that. Do you like how often do you cop negative or mean things to you and how do you deal with that in your mental life.
Oh man, like after a game, like don't go on socials. Like day off.
How long?
Just it's probably about 24 hours people because everyone's very emotionally charged. And I get it. Like I wasn't, you know, I never played sport my whole life, like in a professional stance. So like I was passionate like that at one point, you know, and like I don't know, like social media is not, you know, business professionals. Like you have like 12-year-old kids that don't understand what's appropriate or not on there, you know? So like you're gonna get some backlash from people that just don't understand what's ethical and moral standards, you know, that you should have as a human being. And that's fine. But I think like a day or two, you know, emotions calm down, they come back to real life and then they kind of they wouldn't say the same thing. And myself, I find it funny, man. Like I love social media because it's like I think there's the bad side of it is like negativity, trolling, all that kind of stuff. Don't get me wrong. And like you have to have an amazing, like strong mindset to get through that. And there's a lot of guys that need that. And it's just some that really struggle with that. And I can totally understand. And it's this thing that there's not really coaching for in Australia. Maybe it's an opportunity for someone out there to sit there and say, like, you know, here's the privacy laws, you know, here's how to, you know, turn off commenting, and here's how to, you know, limit people and what they say and all that. But myself, because I didn't grow up with this, like, the whole thing's just kind of funny to me. Like, I'm like,
yeah,
you can be mad at me, but, like, you've played sport longer than me.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing with your life, sir? Kind of thing, you know? Like, well, if you, like, really are that passionate about it, maybe you should have been a player yourself. Like,
it's like, he can't kick, and you're like, you're probably right. I've been doing it for, like, 5 years,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
I'm not supposed to be able
to. You can't kick either, random dude from Twitter, and you've been playing for 30 years. Yes. Like, dude.
Nice youth.
Yeah, great
very
youth.
Nice
yeah,
youth.
Yeah,
good
great
fish.
Youth.
How
yeah,
did you get that such a big fish? Tell me your spots.
Yeah, I think social media is a cool one because you can do some cool stuff with it. And I've been able to connect with some amazing
Delta,
people.
Yeah.
I mean, you have
this
that
is
opportunity.
Bad. This is like gonna be this is gonna be the title of the podcast, Mason Flirts with Delta.
Simon will click on that article.
He will, along with other people. But like social media, like you look at podcasts and podcasts grow because of social media, and you can grow your, you know, both of you would have grown your following and everything because of the TV and everything else. And now you can get opportunities outside of it to do amazing things. Like, there is positive stuff that comes with social media, but I think a lot of people focus on these negative things that are very hard to block out. Like, they are hard to block out, and you see it, and like sometimes you might take it to heart, but I think like my mentality behind it, and like, I don't know how y'all think about this. Have you ever copped criticism on social media? Like,
not really. We're like, so small fry and Gogglebox.
There was someone someone in the first season of Gogglebox tweeted us. I still remember their handle. It was at Mr. Fun Bubbles.
Oh, shout him out, Mr. Fun Bubbles.
Mr. Fun Bubbles said about us, said, oh, how cute. Look, it's two gay brothers dating each other.
Oh, it's 2022. Whatever.
I think the brothers bit weird. Now that I read that back in my head.
Just the levels, like the gay brothers that date each other, you're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So you've got a long way to get
Ed
there.
Liked that one. That was way back in season one.
That was funny. Yeah. But then other than that, not really.
Yeah, because you guys are very known for creating positivity, right? Like, you're kind of like a lighthearted, like great.
Because you're
great
more creating a negativity kind of guy.
Yes, right. I either break someone's heart or, you know, make someone's day. It's very black or white in that sense, no pun intended. But like, you know, I have probably 100,000 Carlton fans that hate me because I play for Collingwood. Whether or not I'm a good person, they don't care. It's purely because I play for Collingwood. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not going to take that personally. Like, that's just, you know, that's a generational thing of just hate towards another club. Like, that's not nothing against my personal standards. So there's kind of things like that where if someone talks trash to me, like, chances are, and if they specifically go out of their way to do it or whatever it is, you know, and I happen to see it, because a lot of times I won't check comments and stuff. And I've just come to realize that's better for my mental health space. But if I do see something, like, I picture someone that's like 50 years old living in mom and dad's basement that has nothing better than to go find me on Twitter and tag me on a random comment that was unnecessarily like tagged. It's like, just put my name. Don't put my handle. No need for that.
Like, I don't actually need to see it.
Yeah,
it's
I don't actually need to see it. If you want to talk trash about me, talk trash. Don't tag me. Don't tag me. If you want to tag me, like, tell me your address. I'll show up. We'll have this conversation face to face. Like,
you got a BOSU ball? I'll rip it off.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of how I think of social media. Like, there is some negativity with it, but I think the positivity, if you do it in the right way, can outweigh all of that, and you can have some amazing experience that come from it.
What about on-field trash?
Love it.
Because, yeah, you're a big on-field trash
People
guy.
Stop talking trash to me in the last, like, couple
really?
Of years, and it pisses me off, because that used to get me really riled up.
Who was just a bully now going after people? Oh,
who was good going at you, and who did you like going at? Do you have a best one from this season that you gave someone?
This is another little never been told story. I don't know if I should be telling the story actually. So before we played Geelong in what you call it, the semifinals or quarterfinal, wherever it is.
It's also so strange we have the semifinal
makes no
before
sense
the prelim final.
It's like semifinal is four teams, but it's actually eight.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense. Or six. Or whatever.
No, it's four.
Know.
Four's the semi.
No, because that's
prelim is four and semi is
no sense.
Two. Yeah. There's still four.
Because
we do two rounds of four.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There's just,
well,
yeah.
It doesn't make sense
in my head.
Anyway.
Doesn't
make
any sense.
I don't know. But there was a player who's now won a premiership as of 8 hours ago.
Down. Yep.
Is before the game. I won't say names, so I don't want to get anyone in trouble here. But like, went out there and he before the game, the Ruckman go and do their center bounce prep, you know? Like, they'll go and do practice center bounce and stuff. And
Geelong Ruckman.
No, it wasn't a Ruckman. He was about
Geelong
half my
defender.
Height. So
Geelong
half my height.
Midfielder.
So, interesting. Now we're really getting there. I don't know.
Yeah, between 20 and
And he did say something about my goggles. Now, my goggles,
yep.
fellas on Gogglebox, but like my goggles have got a bit of a run this year, right? And like it's purely protective, medical, all that kind of stuff. But he said something about that and sunglasses or something. I didn't really understand. And this man did a really cringeworthy ad on his Instagram account recently for an old man product for hair regrowth, right? I followed him on socials before the game. Like I was following because I kind of like knew people that knew him and stuff, you know, and like done a few things with him here and there, whatever. And he said something about it and I was like, get fucked, mate. Why don't you fix the big fucking hole in the back of your head, you old sack of shit? And he just kind of looked at me, and I don't know if he actually understood what I said, but I was like, in my head, I was like, I got him.
Gotcha.
I love how quick you had it loaded up.
He was the only person I had dirt on into the game, he put it on me before the game even started, and I was like, cocked, ready to go, bang. I was like, oh, man. But now he's a premiership player, so I mean, who's laughing now?
Yeah, it's like something to fill that hole.
It's gold. And then a trophy on top of it. Yeah.
I just imagine that, like, had he not started with you, with the goggles, you're running around the field, someone else starts on you, and he just cops a drive-by. You're like, yeah, well, I'll tell you, mate, over here, to bloody fix all in his head. Just like, it's the only one you had ready to go. You're like, I'm panicked.
Oh, man.
Are there any other players in the AFL that are good for back and forth?
Ah, jeez. It depends, man. I think it depends on if you're winning or not. Because if we're winning,
everyone's
just kind of like, you know, doesn't want to talk trash. But if we can be losing by 30, I will still talk shit.
Yeah,
like,
good.
I am happy to, because it gets me up and about. I'm like, you know what? If we're down by 30, chances are we're going to come back in the fourth quarter, kick 60 points, and win by 1 point. You know, like that's just how we do it. So I'm happy to talk trash. As far as like certain players, I forget. I'm really bad with names. This is a bad one. I'm not very good with names in the AFL because I didn't grow up with it. But Sydney's really loves a bit of trash talk as a team, I think. They love a bit of trash talk.
The Collingwood like it as a team?
What's this?
Like trash talk. The rest of the Collingwood boys.
I think the older guys. Yeah, I think they will. Yeah, I reckon we would. Because we're a high pressure team, so we like to tackle people. And if you get more tackles and stuff, you know, like you're kind of in someone's face, you know, you're like, you're kind of showing them up. Where if you're just kicking the ball around, it's like, oh, great, cool, good fun.
This would be boring.
Yeah, it's kind of boring. So, like, we're kind of high pressure and, like, in your face, which I think allows for more trash talk, which is kind of like towards our game times or our playing. So, I think with us, the person who probably is the best on our team of trash talk is probably Braden Maynard.
That's not surprising.
And I love it. Probably my favorite part about Braden is like how just chaotic and crazy and trash talk he is. He's
like wiping the oil off.
That was
Buddy.
So good. And I was like, that is just, so if you were to describe Braden in one, like one instance, it was that instance of like, nah, screw you, you're stupid. Just baby oil gone. I'm going to hug you. I'm just going to absolutely dominate the whole rest of the day. He's just a bull, an absolute bull. And like, he just murders people on the field. Him and Bo McQuarrie.
Yeah,
McCreary. He's one of my favorite too, because he, like, at one point, I don't know if y'all saw this in the year. At one point, he tackled a guy and then ripped his shirt off. Like, he was that menace about it, you know. Like, he literally threw his ass to the ground, then ripped his shirt off, and the guy's just sitting there with his shirt off, got holding the ball, looking like an idiot, going, fuck me.
What did I do to you, sir?
I'm worried about your emotional state.
Here's a phone number. Call them.
If you line the entire Collingwood team up, shoulder to shoulder, and you were like, which guy's the biggest trash talker? You're looking at Braden Maynard and going, it's the guy whose nickname is Bruzzy.
Bruzzy.
You're like, it's the same guy.
I mean, it's just not that surprising, really, is it?
But what about the number 46?
Yes.
Is that's yours for good? You don't want a lower number. You've never wanted a lower number. You're happy with 46. You're going to stick with it.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I guess like it's the better weird, you my get, friend. Yeah. The lower you get your number kind of thing.
It's a strange number, 46.
Yeah, so I was given 46. Mm-hmm. I've been offered to change my number a few times.
Oh, what
23 was open, which was a really good number. That was a cool number. And then a few others. Two's come up. One's come up.
Can't be one.
Yeah, once. But the thing is like, and y'all know this, like, whenever you play with someone else's number, like, you know, it's selfish for me to say, but if you go to like a training session and someone's wearing a number 5 jumper, you don't know if that person's wearing Nathan Buckley's, you don't know if that person's wearing Jamie Elliott's, you don't know if that person's wearing someone else that had worn that jumper before. If I see a 46 jumper out there, you best believe I know that person's a big supporter of me.
Hell yeah.
Big supporter of the big fella. So that's kind of a cool thing. But like, the reason I still have it is I was drafted, and like, this is kind of back to my mentality of things, right? So I was drafted with zero expectation. They're like, we're going to stick you at the very, very, very end of the locker room where no one else is and give you the largest number, because chances are you're not going to make it, right? And in that mentality of like, you know what, this is where I've come from, this is what people thought I'd be able to do, And I'm every single day that I'm here, I'm proving those people wrong. And that's kind of like why I've kept the 46 number. And it's kind of cool now that I can make it my own. And hopefully this year, if anyone... I can make 100 games and you get your name on the locker. And I'm like,
is there anyone else with the name? That's what I was going to ask. There's no one with the 46. You've got the games record for the 46.
I don't know games record 46, but I know there's no one that's played 100 games in 46.
Right.
So maybe someone's played between 94 and 100. I don't know. But yeah, it's cool to make something your own. Like, I think you talk about the USA chant, like in the MCG. Like, that is specifically me. Like, there's no one else there that gets in a USA chant. And that, like, and that might be selfish, but in my mind, I'm like, how fucking cool of an experience is that? Like, to have 100,000 people screaming it, and you know it's for you, like, and it's like unique to you, and people follow your story and support your journey and are like amazed at like what you've done, and they want to do this chant, and it's like, it's cool, man. Like, I can't describe it to anyone else. It gives you chills, and it's like, man, this is sick. I'm living life, like, I'm doing it.
When that was happening, were you actively thinking like, play this cool, like, just play it cool, man?
The first time it ever happened, this has been happening since day dot. Like, there's been two or three people, I think, in the cheer squad that have been doing this for a while. And then, like, now people, you know, it grows and it grows
and beat a team by yourself, which kind of happens.
I didn't do that by myself, boy, man.
Someone had to kick him the footy, but those goals didn't kick themselves, that's for sure.
Man. But, yeah, it started, like, whenever I was in VFL, a few people said it here and there. And, I mean, like, even the President's Cup recently, and they all chant USA at the President's Cup. So it's this kind of thing that's, like, attributed to Americans, is to chant USA. And it sounds good, like chanting AUS kind of doesn't sound as good as USA, like, just different, you know?
Yeah.
I think the first time it properly reached probably the broader spectrum of the MCG was 2018 prelim. But I mean, like, even now, whenever I kick my 100th goal, I could hear it. And it's kind of this cool, like, just, I don't know, like, I've been so fortunate to have such amazing support here in Australia. And it's like moments like that, you really got to soak in. Because it's fleeting, man. Like, I've seen it. I've been, you know, almost out the door a few times. And, like, I know these things don't come around very often. And it's like, man, whenever it happens, take a breath, breathe it all in, and just love it. And never regret not taking it all in.
Well, even at the start of this year, this is, you know, 2022. We're flagging this, and people are listening for a long time. Mm. Even at the first half of this year, you were... like, all of the talk was, you're out of the team, you're no good, this is bad, you're the worst thing that's ever happened to AFL football. And then three games later, you won, you had a large part in winning the game. I won't say that you won it by yourself. I think you did, but that's okay.
Which game is this?
Against Richmond, I think, earlier in the year. You came good again. The USA chant started again, and then it was like, he's the best thing that's ever happened. How do you ride that out? Is that something that
how do you deal with the peaks and troughs?
Yeah.
I don't want to sit there and talk trash about fans, but, like, media here is fickle, very fickle. Oh, and you can be the greatest thing since sliced bread and the biggest piece of shit on the country, like, in the country, all within a week. They say a week's a long time in footy. I think that's one of the quotes or whatever you want to say.
It's one of the ones.
Yeah, one of the lines everyone throws out in the PC world, whatever. But... yeah, I think, like, I mean, I look back to the beginning of the year, and, like, Lee Montagne was like, why the hell would you sign this guy? He's like, trash. Like, why would you? And I remember, and that stuck in my head. And I was like, you know what? Like, we get to a prelim, and I'm like, if I run into you, Lee, I'm going to bring that up. Like, you best believe I'm going to bring that up. Him and David King. And I'm like, you know what? I don't mind it. It's like, if you're going to say that, you got to back it up. If you see me, like, you got to be like, you know, I was wrong. And, like, that's part of media. But, yeah, I think, like, man, like, last year, I've got stories beyond stories of me being an absolute idiot and drunk and almost selling myself to Fremantle and things like that. But yeah, like, there's
how close
he's like, how do you just leave that nugget there? How do you leave that nugget out in the open?
This is Adam and I just like, what, do we do it? Are we asking about it? Why do you?
It's on the Mason Cox show, but if you want to hear it,
there you
I can tell you the story again if you really want to hear it.
We're going to ask it after we finish recording. Yeah, so you may as well tell us recording anyway. Also, were you before we get to that one, how close were you to going to Brisbane? Because Brisbane offered you a couple of years ago.
This was before 2018. So I'd finished my first contract. And yeah, it was crazy, man. Like, I was at kind of like this good time in my life where I was showing enough to be able to get a contract somewhere, right? Get another contract. And that's the best feeling in the world. You know, there's a bit of security around it. And yeah, Brisbane came to the table. I met with a coach, called Dane Beams at the time, was the captain, I think, and was getting phone calls from him and going back and forth. And it's kind of one of the reasons it's cool to me. Like, there's not many jobs in the world you can kind of leverage, you know, and, like, create your own contract. Like, you can ask for, like, hire, you know, you ask for another contract or go somewhere else, wherever it is, you know, but, like, it's cool to me to be like, nah, like I'm going to ask for this amount of money, this amount of years, and like I'm going to meet the people like I'm going to work with. And it's like totally unique to like any other kind of, I love wheeling and dealing and like agency kind of stuff. So yeah, Collingwood was interested to sign me again, but I was like, you know, Brisbane was coming to the table and I was kind of like, oh, you know what? Like two teams watching, you know, you battle them off against each other so you supply can get more cash out of people, right? Like, and that's, they're aware of that's happening. And like, I was aware that they were trying to
it's know, a get business.
The cheapest.
So it is
a business 101. Yep. You can look at what's going on at the club right now. It is a business. Like, and I don't want to sit there and upset any kind of supporters, but you'd be silly not to say there's enough money involved nowadays to call it a business. And yeah, at that time, Brisbane and everything else. And yeah, it got really close, man. Like if it wasn't for some legality matters and some stuff with citizenship and stuff like that, I might have been in Brisbane.
Wow.
Which is kind of crazy. Yeah, like it was some stuff with permanent residency, like was a bit of a question mark and if I would ever be able to get another contract because of athletes maybe going off the list of permanent residencies that can actually, or sorry, people that can apply for permanent residency and then be able to get citizenship. And there's all this stuff that I was having to get a legal person involved in to figure out if I could even sign there and then if I could actually get another contract past that or I'd have to go back to America. And there's like this whole kind of thing behind it. And yeah, it was a crazy time. And, you know, I had all the contracts in front of me and I remember just sitting in a room and like calling my brother up I was at the agent's office and I remember just sitting there and I had both contracts in front of me and I called up my brother and like in my mind, I'd committed to Brisbane. And I was like, oh, cool. I'm going to live my life in Brisbane now. Like I've done some cool shit in Melbourne. Don't get me wrong, but I'm going to go live in Brisbane. Oh, it's beautiful weather up there. I love Brisbane. Gold Coast, all that kind of stuff, man. Like absolute God's country, as they say.
God's country. And, the Gold Coast is God's country.
Mate,
you got to get a new God, brother.
Mate, Alexander Hads, man. Oh, you got a path my there. God.
Oh, movie world.
Movie world.
A bit more of a SeaWorld or Wet and Wild.
Yeah, Jesus.
I'm a Hinterlands kind of fella,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's closer. That's closer to God's country.
But then you nearly sold yourself to Fremantle.
Yeah, well, I'll finish the Brisbane story. So, yeah, I sat there and I essentially was like mentally committed to Brisbane. And it was crazy. And then essentially Collingwood comes back and goes, we'll match the offer. And then, and this is like maybe like a day before the end of the trade deadline or something like that, wherever it was, you know, I was really close to the end. So I was meeting with these Collingwood coaches. And I remember it's like, I went to this cafe and I met with Robert Harvey, who was the midfield coach. And he was like, we see you in this position. Don't leave us. We need you in the backup ruckman. We need you in the forward line and all this. And I remember I was sick. Like I was like, had like a stomach bug. And like the worst one I've ever had. So I'm going to this meeting to like figure out my future of what it's going to be. And I'm sitting there like for 30 minutes in the toilet.
They're like, oh God, he's what a power play. And you're like, oh my
he's
God.
Like, he's probably thinking I'm taking phone calls in the bathroom going, this amount of money, is it worth it? Do I go back to him with this much? I'm not really sure.
Either that, he's looking at you going, he's sweating. We've got him. We have absolutely got him here.
You're just trying not to turn inside out. Yeah. This is good stuff.
And it was that same day that I essentially said, you know, and they came to the table and matched it and said, you know, and I kind of had the legality stuff behind the scenes. I wasn't sure where it was going to go. And in my mind, I was like, you know what, this is a smarter decision, is to make sure that I can get another contract. Be able to get permanent residency, be able to get citizenship, and be able to stay here long term. And that was kind of like part of the whole thing. So, yeah, leveraged Brisbane a bit to get the Collingwood offer. 2018, first game, get suspended and have like two touches. And I just signed a 3-year deal.
Done this well, yeah.
Like, everyone's like, oh, great. 3 years of this shit. Awesome. So excited. Well done, Collingwood. Well done. So that was an interesting. You talk about social media. You want to talk about that week? Far out, man. If you went back and looked at some of the comments on that week, it would not have been pretty. But yeah, so then Fremantle was probably the other time I almost got traded and was into the last year and I was out of contract, wasn't playing well, like totally understandable from that club's perspective that maybe let me go. And they were trying to decide on who they're going to keep and a few other things. And like Max Lynch was kind of, if he went, they would kind of keep me. And then he goes to Hawthorne and then this opportunity comes up. But before all that happened, I was in ACL, you know, Austin City Limits, big festival in the US, right?
Oh.
No. I got an exemption to go back to the US to do some USAFL stuff. Questionable, yes, I agree. But, it's the government.
Yep.
So we won't go into the details of that happened. But anyway, got to go back, ambassador for the USAFL, AFL overseas. Next week, I'm in Austin and I'm going to ACL. It's like 200,000, 300,000 people. First big event since COVID, right? In America. And it's like, I've literally been locked in my house for like 2 years. I'm letting loose. Like, you best believe I'm going to have a good time. And we get there and like, you know, everyone's partying, everyone's listening to Miley Cyrus, Party in the USA is going on. I'm like, yo, this is great. Oh, this is so good. This is the best day of my life.
I love you.
All this kind of stuff. I love you, marry me, Delta. And it was this whole thing.
Ed, so Ed, if you can just
I kind of mumbled through that a bit.
If you can like edit that. So like just grab that little bit and put it back at the start, that'll be great. That'll be magic.
We'll record for 3 hours. That's the one thing that'll come out of this.
Absolutely. We actually don't even need the other part. We just need the socials grab.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. So anyway, so I'm at ACL and like this massive festival and like I'm sitting there in this Tito's tent and oh, this friend that's hanging out with me. I get this phone call from my manager. And he's like, hey man, like, and I was kind of knew that Frio was interested because there's a few things were happening. One guy was going to leave possibly and like they needed someone to kind of take his spot, another toll. And
you went on toll.
Rory Lobb.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rory Lobb.
I don't say names.
Hey, I said the name. Yeah.
For anyone listening to the audio, I just head nod very hard. Yeah. But yeah, so that was kind of playing out, and they weren't sure if he was going to go or not, what was going to happen, and they needed someone to essentially fill that role. And I'm friends with Justin, who's the head coach, and Boydie, who's one of the assistant coaches there, and they've been coaches at Collingwood, and moved over there, and were successful, and they were doing amazing. They're great people, and I was like, you know, I'm definitely interested. So they kind of got to this point. My manager called me. I was like, hey, man, like, they're going to call you. And I was like, when? They're like, now. And I was like, shit. I was like, damn. I was like, off my tits, like, having a great time. And I just remember looking at my brother. I was like, sew me up somehow. Like, give me some bread, give me some coffee, give me like water, whatever it is. I'm not really sure. So then I like do that. And like, he calls me and I'm on FaceTime. You're doing FaceTime audio. It's like, it's terrible. Oh, like, so oh man. And it's like,
especially with 30,000 other people there.
300,000.
Oh, yeah.
One bar reception. And I'm on like, I don't know how questionable Telstra is over there, but like, I was on some other like kind of phone plan where it was and one bar and I like shimmy out this like back gate. Go into this like ditch so I can actually hear and it doesn't sound like Modest Mouse is playing the greatest set of their life behind me. And I'm like sitting there and I'm talking to Justin. I'm getting like one out of every like 5-6 words. I got no idea what he's saying, you know. And I'm just
doing
going,
a lot of this. Yeah.
I'm going, huh? Yep. Unemployed. Let's remember, unemployed, I'll take anything.
Yeah.
And so I'm in this ditch, in this absolute ditch. I've done this phone. And I'm like, get to the point. He's like, says something. He's waiting for me to answer. I'm like, okay, I can't play this out any longer. Like, I don't know what you're saying. I was like, let me call you back. So I hang up the phone on Justin. He, like, I didn't even ask. Like, it just was like, bang, see you later. He probably didn't even hear me. And I just went on this dead sprint. And I'm like out the back of these stages where all the artists like go by in their carts and everything else. And I'm just like this gangly giraffe, like running down this like KOA, get into this like back area of like where all the sets are. And I like sit on the back of this like truck. And I call him back in. I got two bars now. I'm like, whoa, we're on.
Double the bars.
Double the bars. Double the receptions. I'll get one out of every 3 words.
Yeah,
now.
I was going to say.
So I call him back. And he's like, hey, man, like, I understand you're enjoying your life, man. I understand what's going on. Like, you're at a big music festival. Like, don't want to take up your time. But if this happens, X, Y, Z, just want to let you know we'd be interested. And this is what it would be. And this is kind of how we'd, like, sort it out. And I was like, yeah, no worries, man. Just send it to my agent. I'll sort it out from there. He'll shoot me an email or text. We'll figure it out. And yeah, so like I kind of got back and my brother was just like, what happened? And I was like, quite hammered. I didn't really remember all the conversation. I just remember like, I don't know. I think I might have just sold my soul to Frio. I'm not really 100% sure. Like I might be moving to Perth, but
God's country. That's
God's country too.
Yeah, God's country as well.
Beaches, gotta love Perth. But I wasn't really sure. So like at some point in my life, I was like in this drunken escapade saying like, oh, I might've actually just got traded without even knowing really 100% what was going on.
That's a trade phone call, yeah.
That was a trade phone call and I had no clue. And I was like, okay, well, in 2 days time, I might be packing up my stuff and moving to Frio.
Far out. Mm.
But that's like, I mean, really only another 4 hours away. Like I'm only now like 28 hours away from home.
So it depends on which way you're flying. If you're flying back,
that actually might be closer to home now.
Fly into the loop and away you go.
Yeah.
And so, you would have looked shit in purple, mate.
I don't know.
Stripes are good.
The stripes are good. I love stripes.
Stripes are good. They work.
Makes you look even taller.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's what I need. A few extra inches. Oh man,
mate. We really appreciate you coming in today and. We like to finish our interviews with a little bit of a choose your own adventure.
Okay.
So you've got 5 options and you'll pick 2 of them.
Love that.
It's who, what, when, where, why.
Yep.
Who, what, when, where, why. Each of them has a question that comes after it, but you pick 2.
Yeah.
Who, what, when, where, why.
Just anyone in the world.
Fuck, I thought I was so close to getting it done.
You were close.
So there's a question, but
you don't know what the question is until you pick which word. You pick the starting word.
Oh, so I can pick one of the 5
2
questions.
You pick 2
of the 5 questions.
Who, what, when,
Who?
Who? Okay.
Who?
Yeah.
I'm going to write them down because I always forget. There's two things that happen
and
in this show.
You have to pick your second one now too.
Where?
Where? Okay. I'm going to ask
a bit of travel, so.
Yeah, yeah, this is, this is good. Where, I'm going to bring it back to your travel. Mm. You mentioned early days. Where is, I'm going to actually double up here.
Love this. I'm all for it.
All right. Where is a place that if you could only go back to one place for a holiday over and over and over and over again, you would go?
And you can't go anywhere else in the world.
Whit Sundays, 100%.
That you just keep going back?
No questions asked, man. You could do scuba diving. You could do reef stuff. There'd be fishing. There's everything up there. There's island hopping. There's just beauty everywhere. It is one of the most amazing places in the world that people don't realize they have in their backyard.
That's a good answer.
That or New Zealand.
Oh,
whoa.
Whoa, what a pivot. Whoa. That or New Zealand. Yeah. Okay.
Can't swim in the Whitsundays during winter though, can you? Because there's stingers.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, it's kind of it's like a, you know, we recommend that you not wear it. I've talked to a few guys, you know, they're like, you can go. You're fine.
Right. Oh, yeah. Okay.
I know some people.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I'm just some people willing to bend the rules.
Yeah.
I'm just really rattled by that. And New Zealand. Yeah. And New Zealand.
Lord of the Rings fans. Lord of the Rings fans.
Yeah, some Kiwi listeners, you know? Exactly. You just never know.
The second part of that was where on your European trip were you at your peak?
Oh, at my peak as far as... oh,
not fitness, not anything where you were just like...
just like your
this, I'm doing it. Mason this Cox. Is, I'm having it.
Running with the Bulls in Pamplona.
Oh, did you run?
I did run.
Good one.
And I was... oh, man, it is some scary stuff.
Yeah.
And running it with the Bulls just before you're about to start a new professional athlete career is also like super
it's the most like 22-year-old. Just in case there was any wonder about how serious Mason was taking it early days.
Yeah.
He's like, what's the worst that could happen?
22.
Well,
whatever.
Get horned by a bull.
That's so funny. That's
that was amazing. Though. If you ever, if anyone out there that hasn't done it, it's a great experience. Like just crazy, epic, like just adrenaline 101.
Mm.
Good fun. And it might not be around for long because Peter's probably going to kill it off.
Absolutely.
It's like the whole thing with the
which isn't the irony of the killing.
Which is, I understand. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I understand everything. We're open-minded podcast.
Yeah.
Very
I missed running with the Bulls because I fell asleep in a park. And then...
really?
Yeah. And then it
in
was
Pamplona?
Like, yeah. Yep. So I was there for it and then slept in the park. And then it was like, all right, we've got to be up at 7
six,
to go
yeah, it's
to
like
running.
6 or 7 in the morning.
So then we went to the train station to put our bags there. And then it took too long to get the bags in. Mm. And then we went to the thing and it was, you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So then we went to the stadium at the end.
The stadium was good though.
The stadium was fun.
Wow, good fun. People real like loose. Slapping the balls by them and like, trying to get, people get flung like 5 meters.
Oh,
in the it's insane.
Fully axed.
Insane. And then they like stand underneath like where the ball comes out and just get like literally hoofed in the head.
They just
want
the
out.
Ball
like,
to jump and stuff.
Oh, it's insane, man. Like I got mugged. Was salsa dancing and then slept in the train station at one point, I think during that like 2-3 days. And, yeah, and then we got kicked out of an Airbnb. 10 of us slept in one bedroom apartment and then broke, I think, a few lights in the apartment too. It was a wild 48 hours.
That was about 7 stories
was,
in one.
It was like a wild 48
they each
hours.
Have their own like divergent lights. That's like a bit of Final Fantasy stuff.
Side missions. Every side mission you want to do.
It was a good time, I'll
do
tell
you.
You
follow
not much sleeping.
Oh, no.
There's 7 of you in one room. Do you want to follow this up? Next room, it's like, you've broken 2 lights. Do you want to follow this up?
And
that's
who?
Really funny.
So who have you lost contact with that you would love to reconnect with?
Oh, man. That's a good question. Who have I lost contact with that I'd love to reconnect with? I had one of my best friends in high school, Chad Caldwell. He's a guy that was...
big fan of the show, Chad.
Big fan of the show.
He actually loves the show. He's always
writing it. Chad loves it. He's a person that's kind of... you know, you grow up and you do different things and you go on different parts of your life. And he's still back home doing some stuff with his family and everything else. I just haven't really seen him in probably 5-6 years. And we used to spend every day together in high school. A lot of crazy, dumb stories that we have together. But it's weird. Kind of life, you know, you go different paths and different things. But the beauty of that is those people in life that you have those connections with, whether it be 5, 10, you know, 7 years, whatever it is, the second you meet back up, you just have that connection again, you know. And there's something to say about those relationships in life, I think, those that really stick around. And no matter how long and where you go in different paths in your life and everything else, you still have that you know, that love for each other. And I think guys struggle to say the love word, but I'll definitely love him. And he's been an amazing person in my life.
Awesome.
What a way to finish. Yep. Mm. Mate, we love you. You're welcome back here anytime you like.
Absolutely anytime. Check out the Mason Cox Show. You can get it wherever you listen to your podcast.
We didn't even talk about the podcast. You'll have to come back on for part two.
Hey, I'm down to go part two. We can just actually just cut it here and then start back over.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, who's he today?
Give Mason a follow at Mason610Cox. As a side note, does anyone think your middle name is Sixton?
There has been people say that, and it's like, yo, I'm literally trying to make this as easy as possible up at the height thing. I literally wear a shirt, and I have a whole Instagram account that is literally explaining it.
Even though you're 6'11"?
I am 6'11". I'm telling you. It doesn't sound as good. Doesn't sound as good.
Mason 6'11", Cox, not the same ring. Mace, thanks for joining us, mate.
No worries. Thanks for having me on, legends.